On Thursdays this month, Morning Edition has been considering time, the way time is compressed in some too busy lives, the nature of time as it extends over a long marriage, the quality of time at a monastery where it stops regularly for prayers and contemplation. Before time runs out on her series, NPR's special correspondent Susan Stamberg tries to put it into historical perspective.
Although we strap time to our wrists, Monique Truong writes in her new novel, The Salt Book, stuff it into our pockets, hang it on our walls, a perpetually moving picture for every room of the house, it can still run away, elude, and evade. Indeed. And time can tick, time can boom. There's a new permanent exhibition of time pieces at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. There are sundials, moon dials, stopwatches, grandfather clocks. Mark Hayward, curator of that show, says time is arbitrary and depends on who or what is keeping track of it.
Our perception of time is based on the fact that we're earthlings. We're spinning on the earth and the sun is coming up and going down. That is like the ultimate pendulum. And you know, noon is an astronomical event. Nobody really knows, like, who the person was one day that sat there and put a stick in the ground and said, okay, this is noon. It's one of those things that slowly evolved and slowly emerged out of human activity.
When did minutes start to be important?
Well, minutes are really related to the mechanical clock. One of the things that you have to remember about timekeeping instruments is they are measurement tools. And one of the groups of people who really relied on these measurement tools were astronomers. And they were trying to do things like map the heavens. And they needed very precise timekeepers to make observations. So one particular astronomer in the 15th century counted the teeth on a wheel inside his clock. That was only, you know, was moderately accurate for hours, but the hour hand didn't do him any good. So he opened up the clock and he counted the teeth as the wheel would move. So it was really scientific, the clock as a scientific instrument that kind of led to those finer divisions.
And to have a clock, you had to be pretty rich, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Buying a clock in those days, this is around 1800, it was kind of like buying a book. You bought a movement, and then you had a case made for it, kind of like binding a book and having it bound.
Well, I remember learning the wristwatch was a real milestone because it was something that eventually everyone could afford. But before that, that's why there were clock towers. And before them, bell towers, something for the masses, mostly poor people, laborers who needed to show up someplace on time. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the wristwatch, really the pocket watch, is what we think of as, that became the first mass-consumed timekeeping device.
Oh, I love thinking about them, pictures of the old railroad conductors and
absolutely.
Pulling that watch out of their pockets and always a beautiful long chain that
absolutely.
Attached it.
Yeah, I mean, the railroad industry has a particular link to timekeeping because as you could travel over greater distances at high speeds, things like differences in local time became more important. You know, if you're walking, you're traveling by horse, you don't notice that the time in Chicago is different from the time in Denver because you're moving so slow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on a train, you can feel that distortion of time and the differences in local time.
Yeah. So get us from the pocket watch to the wristwatch.
The story of going from the pocket watch to the wristwatch is one of my very favorite stories about timekeeping devices because it's a fashion story. In Victorian times, you know, every gentleman, of course, would have a pocket watch and would be kept on a chain and probably in a pocket in a vest or coat. A wristwatch would have been considered effeminate and a kind of piece of jewelry. And in fact, the earliest wristwatches were bracelets. But in World War I, aviators had a need to have a timekeeping device that they could look at very easily and that they could, you know, carry with them lightweight. And, you know, that's where the first wristwatches were made. They were actually made for aviators. Well, when kids and other, you know, men saw these cool aviators, I mean, aviators were it. They were the big stars of World War I. They wanted to be just like them. And so that's really how the wristwatch became a men's fashion.
And now we've got these digital watches, and I wonder how they affect our sense of time. To me, it's the disappearance of the circle from our lives, things that go round and round and round.
Well, that I think you've hit on a really profound sort of point. If you think of a regular clock dial face with 12 hours on it, the hour hand really mimics the shadow on a sundial. If you take the minute hand off and you think about it for a second, that's really what that hour hand is doing, is mimicking that sweep of the shadow on a dial. And, you know, once you move from that to a digital watch, you're right, you're losing that connection. I mean, there's a real profound transition that happened in the last century, where we moved from using celestial mechanics, the movement of the stars, to using quantum mechanics to regulate and be the standard for our time. The definition of second used to be a fraction of the solar day. But what happened was, in the early 20th century, as more accurate kinds of clocks were developed, quartz clocks, atomic clocks, people began to realize that there are irregularities in the spinning of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And humans were building clocks that were more accurate than sort of the ultimate clock. So now the definition of the second, which was established in 1967, is something like 9 billion vibrations of a cesium-133 atom.
Tick-tock to you. And what kind of a wristwatch do you wear, Mr. Hayward?
Well, actually, I don't wear a wristwatch.
He's timeless. He says there's so much time around us, on computers, Palm Pilots, on cable TV, he doesn't need to carry it around on his wrist. Mark Hayward, curator of the new permanent exhibition on time at Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington.